Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. It seems like summer is here because it's really hot. The sun is shining very bright. And when I came to campus today, it seems like a lot of people are going to the beach, which I would not dispute because of how wonderful the weather is today. Today's episode, I'm bringing back another wonderful interview with a great friend of mine, and so stay tuned for that. But before we get started, let's get through the ads, PSAs, and show promos, and we will get into the episode right away. So I'll see you guys in a couple minutes.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
If the news are getting you down, or you're tired of scrolling on your phone, Massey Books is the one-stop shop for you. A 100% Indigenous-owned business that is committed to giving back to local charities, community initiatives, and organizations, Massey Books has a vast selection of rare and unique books, as well as a diverse range of books that are from underrepresented authors. You can shop online at masseybooks.com or visit their store on 229 East Georgia Street in Chinatown. They are open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Wednesday to Saturday, and 12 to 5 from Sunday to Tuesday. Their friendly staff would love to give you a hand to find your new favorite read.
Do you want to advertise with CITR Radio and Discorder Magazine? Well, good news, you can. Our copies of Discorder Magazine span 6,000 square kilometers and reach 3 million inhabitants across 32 locations here in Vancouver. Advertising with Discorder Magazine means being seen from UBC to New Westminster. Along with print, we offer advertising online, offering you a viewership to over 100,000 engaging with our content. From radio ads to Discorder Magazine and our online presence, CITR and Discorder Magazine knows how to get you seen. Contact sponsorship at citr.ca to get advertising today. Sponsorship at citr.ca.
Did you know that community radio stations in Canada broadcast in more than 65 different languages? This is where stories come alive and where we come together. But as big international media dominates the spotlight, local news and local voices struggle to be heard. Our government must help these local stations continue to do what they do best, serve the unique needs of our communities. We're asking you to go support the Community Radio Initiative at mycri.ca. Stand with us for community radio future.
For the best in funk, soul, surf, and more music, tune in to Jack Velvet's Suburban Jungle Show, Wednesday mornings from 8 to 10 at CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Add us on Twitter at Jack Velvet Radio, Jack Velvet's Suburban Jungle Show. Also available streaming and podcast at jackvelvet.net.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. I'm glad to be back in person. Like I said, today's weather is really, really great. I hope that everyone can go outside and enjoy the weather. It is a holiday today. It's Canada Day, and so it seems like there's nobody on campus. I do know that the summer session is going on right now. But considering it is a holiday today, it seems like they took off school. And so I hope everybody takes the time today to rest up, recharge, and hopefully come back tomorrow and start another great day in school. So it seems like because today is a holiday that there are some events that are going on. I think there's like this fireworks show that's going on around my area. And I just want to say, please, everybody, have fun, but also be safe. And, you know, it kind of needs to work and balance together to really fully enjoy the time. But all right, let's get right into today's episode. Today, I'll be coming in with an interview, my friend Sepper. And so, without further ado, would you like to introduce yourself?
Gladly. Hey, my name is Sepper, and I'm glad to be here.
Thank you, Sepper, for making the time. How was your commute here? I know that you rode your bike. It's really, really sunny outside. And to begin, actually, I want to ask you, for people who ride bikes, do you feel the immense heat on your back from the sun, especially like a day today?
Okay, the immense heat. Okay, the back, I would say you're fairly okay with as long as you're moving. Like, I mean, me, for example, and of course, don't do what I do. But in weather like this, I don't usually wear much gear. I'm much of just like a pants, t-shirt, gloves, and helmet. Because I do want to actually feel the wind as I'm riding. But no, as long as you're riding, it's perfect. I mean, despite the weather being hot and you're going on like a highway with a bike, you'd think you would feel cold with the wind. Complete opposite. It's totally warm.
Interesting. I do know that you also drive. And yes. So what do you think is the difference between driving and riding your bike? Like what really intrigues you more and why?
I mean, I've been more like a car enthusiast kind of guy since like mid-high school. And kind of the second I could get a license, I got mine because I was just into cars and I just want to get myself into it. But no, cars, I mean, cars are great, especially like because I drive like a truck for my personal car and they're great, safe on the road, spacious. You feel like a king on the road as you're riding all over the place. But just the main difference between a car and a bike is like a car, you're kind of in there, but you're more relaxed and it's a more smooth ride. There's not much you're doing other than focusing on the road and just going through from point A to point B. Whereas kind of on the bike, you're more so because you have to be active through every step of the ride as you're on. So you have to change your gear, figure out where your hands are, figure out your body positioning on the bike, because during the turns you have to lean the bike, control your body, look all over the place. Like trucks, you have sensors, big mirrors to look over everywhere. Whereas a bike, you have mirrors, but you're not seeing anything. And aside from that, you also have to just make yourself visible on the road. Like lane positioning is different. A truck, you're just in the road, you're kind of riding, it's relaxed. But like a bike, you got to be on the left lane, make sure you're in someone's blind spot. If you're in them beside them, you have to kind of make yourself visible, go past them. A lot more active as you're riding on the bike than riding a car. That's why it's like right now, if I have to go like North Vancouver, because I live in like Pitt Meadows, with a car, I pretty much refuse to go that far if I don't need the car, especially with rush hour traffic.
Did it take you a long time to train yourself to ride a bike?
Oh, no. I mean, I rode bicycles a lot. It doesn't help much, but I would definitely say to the average person, it takes a lot more time to kind of get used to the handles and the different controls. But for me personally, it took me 2 weeks to pretty much get comfortable with everything on the bike. It was just putting in the time and actually practicing on the road to just kind of get comfortable going to speeds on the road, whereas now you're pretty much on a bicycle, no shielding around you as you're riding. That was the only part I had to get comfortable with. But other than that, no, it was fairly quick for me to learn how to ride.
Interesting. I think I'm a little too scared to ride a bike, but I definitely do need to practice my driving. But why don't we drive into your story? Beginning with, you did mention that you came to Canada in seventh grade, so we can kind of start off there. Brief explanation of how you kind of came about, what your experiences are in Canada, and then leading up to, you know, your high school years.
Well, I mean, to begin with, I was the typical of the run immigrants that came to Canada from Iran. And pretty much, I mean, now the method of getting here has changed and gone much easier with just people being able to get lawyer student visas and getting themselves here straight away. But for us, we more so left Iran, not more so like a struggle financially. It was more so just because the religion that my parents had in Iran, it was very frowned upon, and they just got like trouble with it. So we would get disrespected everywhere, and my dad's business, they would not treat him right. So pretty much he himself just decided he was done with the country. And since his brother was leaving, he was like, perfect timing, gonna go with him. We would come here. And then our method was pretty much that we went to Turkey at the beginning, to Istanbul, and we stayed there for about a year waiting to get accepted. Because we had to wait to get accepted, which country we were going to get accepted to get into and how long it would take, like which city we had to go to. Finally, after a year and a half, we got accepted for Canada. And then for once we got accepted, now you had to wait for everything to go through, your background check and everything. And it kind of now you have to wait to get your flight date, which the government had to give you. You couldn't just get your ticket once you had that through. And that flight date was the part that really stressed like our entire family up, because I left Iran when I was 9, and my brother, who's 5 years older than me, he was at 14 when we left. So I was generally still in the beginning school year, so I didn't miss much. But for like my brother, by the time we got here, he was grade 12. So he missed middle school and pretty much all of high school when he got here. So school-wise, we fell behind, and pretty much we got stuck in Turkey for like 3 years, just eating out of our pockets from whatever money we had from Iran. And the main reason that it was stressful, because for the flight date, the government, like the kind of the number we had, we already had our flight date, but they had our number wrong in the system, so they couldn't inform us about their flight date. So we got like a year delay that way. And then finally, we ended up getting in Vancouver, and I started in grade 6. But then I did the test, kind of like the kind of literature, English tests, and all that to see if I was good enough to just move on to grade 7 or stay back a year. And from there, I was good enough, did the test, passed, started grade 7. Kind of was just to myself because I didn't know English, didn't know much, just kind of learned from the students. But finally, in high school, grade 9, I moved cities like 3 times during grade 9. I was first in Coquitlam, went to there Glen Eagle, then moved to Pitt Meadows, still was going to Glen Eagle, but then I changed to Pitt Meadows Secondary in the beginning semester of grade 9, and then we ended up leaving Pitt Meadows before the semester ended, coming back to Port Coquitlam, so I had to come back to Glen Eagle again. And then from there, and I was already missing half a semester due to help moving and everything between schools. Grade was down, couldn't get myself up in grades. So just kind of in math and everything, I was low. Throughout whole high school, I was like a barely passing grade in most of it. Most like math and science-wise, I was like 59, 60, 70. The other stuff I was good at, I was fairly to myself throughout the entire school until grade 10. And that's where I started drama class. That was because my brother, since he was in grade 12, he kind of just from his experience of not knowing anyone, just said, hey, if you're going to find people to hang out with in your school, go to drama class. Took it. And then in drama class, that's where I met the first two people that I started hanging out with, which was Sam and Ava, which you know. So I met those people. And then during lunchtime, they started kind of including me into their group. And that's how I started actually finally find like a group in high school to hang out with and find some friends, which was good and all. And then work-wise, during that time, I had no idea kind of what I wanted to do, whereas like everyone else kind of in high school from grade 9, they kind of already have a gist idea of like which trajectory they want to go to, so they know which classes to take to help them get into like a proper college and everything. Me, I was just long for the ride. They don't know what I was much into. And then my dad was just hopping in between jobs because the career he had in Iran, he couldn't get into because over here doesn't exist. Because he had a store where he sold, like, I would say, I guess you could call it poison here for farms. Mostly just kind of like the herbs and everything people use at farms. Whereas here, no one uses that type of stuff here. So there wasn't the business for it. So from then, that's when he started his construction company, because he was like, he tried roofing, he tried all of it. They didn't like working for people. He just wanted to be his own boss. He started that. And then from end of grade 10, that's where I kind of slowly entered into the field of construction, because I was like, I want some money to spend for myself. And he was like, just come work for me. I'll pay you hourly, just like normally. And it's easier for the hours. You don't have to work for someone else. I can be your boss. It's easier for everyone. And like every summer here and then, if he needed help, I would go in. And then pretty much from then, I kind of got stuck in it. Whereas at the beginning, I didn't much so want to be in construction, because of course it's physical labor. You have to work in the rain, especially in Canada. It's raining pretty much the entire year. In summer, it gets scorching hot. And you still have to be in the outside just shoveling, picking heavy stuff up. It's like the work itself, I wasn't much of a fan of. But then just in general, the reason I got stuck in was because my dad still doesn't know much English. So because I learned English, I kind of got stuck in it just to help kind of him out, figure out pricing, how to talk to clients, help him with everything he needed in the business. And even to now, that's kind of the situation where I'm kind of stuck in it, where it's like, if I did want to get out of it, it's kind of the guilt. If I do get out, he can't much work so for himself. That's kind of the main reason I'm still in it. Really, that's pretty much the gist of it. But pretty much how it went from high school was, we started, we were fairly small, not getting much clientele, because of course we were new to the business. We had to learn kind of how to be in Canadian kind of structure. And the main breaking point of, I'd say that like the business kind of started to getting going, which had me kind of want to stay in it. But even now, of course, I say I'm stuck in it, but I still like the work, because I'm doing managing as well. It's a fun work. You get to work for yourself, manage everything. It's outside, because I don't like office work. I want to be active. Just from like a young child, I was an active kid. So kind of in the work where I'm active, it helps me kind of stay fit and just general. I guess I wouldn't call it depressed, but just active is the right word. But like pretty much from then, like after high school, grade 12, when I graduated, went full force into the company, pretty much took the managing, do everything as far as finding clients, talking to clients. If we gotta find materials, I have to call around every company in Canada, figure out how we have to get done. And because we're new to the thing, kind of anything we do, we kind of have to figure out the Canadian way to do it. Because in terms of like culture-wise, Iran, in terms of construction, I would 100% say we're ahead of like Canada. Because like if you look at like the designs of like buildings and the kind of old culture of Iran, the stuff they built there is like the design is way more complex and like actually culture-wise, whereas like Canada, we're kind of stuck in the simple way. Like every neighborhood you go into, you see one house, 10 houses is a copy of the same houses, because people want it cheap, houses are expensive, so people want to spend the least amount they can on a house. And kind of that way, that was the main learning curve, which like we want to do it one way, but then half the clients don't want to do it that way. And because we're mainly Persian, we can only get Persian clients. And that's where the kicker comes in the business. Because like usually, like I would say, I mean, you can confirm if this is true or not, but like the Asian demographic kind of in the business world, they like to stay together. It's like we can help each other out, grow. It's the same. Every other culture I've seen, that's kind of how they work. Iranians, complete opposite.
Interesting.
Like Iranians, the demographic of like richer Iranians, North Vancouver, West Vancouver, all of them are in there. And any new immigrant, even though if they don't have much money, they go to North Vancouver because they want to be just close to the richer demographic of Iran. Despite the fact that like Like here, if you go to like half our Persian clients, the idea like landscaping to them becomes like a work that doesn't deserve much money. Like you go in, someone can be like, oh, yo, come to my house, bring a topsoil, which is just like the fertilizer for like trees and whatnot. And like, oh, I'll bring a little bit, just spread it for my trees. And like it, to them, they feel like the work isn't worth much. Whereas like for the actual like business, us, when we actually factor in the costs, it's not, but Iranians don't accept that. Whereas like anytime we've had Canadian customers, you tell them a price, they just want it in writing. So it's like confirm if you're doing this, this is what you're doing. And they're okay to pay the price you ask for. They don't haggle much. With Iranians, you do one work, they say okay to the price. Then once it's done, now comes the haggling work. Which now, like, it's like you want to get the money. It's like you already say, oh, you're okay with the price. But then you do the job. And now suddenly everyone wants to get going with the haggling. And it just becomes this whole hate-love relationship. Where it's like you kind of have to work with the Iranian culture. But at the same time, you don't. Because we're constantly pushing each other away in the business world rather than actually helping each other grow as like a culture. So even in that, just that part of it, in the construction, that's the most stressful part, just kind of finding clients.
When you say haggling, do you mean the negotiation of prices?
Like negotiating, like some people, you can just say, oh, like, can I get a cheaper price? Which is fair, everyone wants a good deal. But Persians do it the different way. Like if the contractor is like an Iranian person, they try to guilt you into giving like a cheaper price. Like they'll nitpick you at all the time as you're working. They'll be up on your head as you're working. And it's like just like from my experience, like if we're working somewhere, the client itself just standing above you, just watching every step as you're going on, just makes you stress and actually just mess up the work more. But then once you're done, they'll nitpick every small detail, which the longer it takes, the more money it costs you to like come back over and over to fix everything, could try and make them happy. Because at the end of the day, they have your money, and it's like you don't have much leverage to even argue with them. Because they're in that situation, they have the most power. Because like, I have your money, you finished the work already. And that's the main problem. Like they wait until you finish the work, then they start haggling you because they're like, we have the money. Now they're just nitpicking, saying, oh, come fix this. I'll pay you once you fix it. You fix it, they go, oh, fix this part. Once you fix this, then I'll pay you. And it's just a back and forth game constantly with every Persian client.
That must be tough. And I think one of the most difficult parts with working with customers is just the communication. And so it seems like everybody communicates in a different way. And sometimes it just doesn't work out the way that you want it to. But in terms of how your job is like on a day-to-day basis, can you run me down on what your routine looks like? And from what I'm hearing from you, it doesn't seem like you have a fixed routine a fixed day that you go through. But in general, what is kind of the day like for you?
I mean, yeah, like as you said, like in construction, there's no such thing as like a proper fixed schedule where it's like, ideally, you'd want to come in on a certain time to start, and then we have to leave by 4 just due to like noise regulations and whatnot. But like usually on a normally day basis, if like everything is prepared at the job site, we don't have to get any materials before we get to work. Kind of just get your stuff ready in the morning, get in a truck. And usually for us, we usually have our workers come to our house and we'll put all 5 guys in one truck and we'll go to the job site. Then once we get there, we just kind of start doing everything. One person's in charge of one area, one person's in charge of this area. And usually for me, the reason I'm more so on the physical demanding, because most of our workers are on the older side, just because the younger workers, there's no reason for them to want to come in construction. And if they do, they go for the bigger companies. Because bigger companies, they have the same amount of work, equal pay with less physical work. Because they have enough money where they can hire more people for the same job. So the physical part is divided between more people. Whereas us, it's like it's more demanding on the budget because we can't have too many guys on job site. And we're trying to keep the cost down for every job site we're on. But pretty much, I usually do like the operating of machines, the labor work, driving everyone to work, plus driving back, which that of itself, most of our jobs are in the Vancouver area, because the residents there are like the more of the richer side, so they spend more money renovating their house. So those are the main guys doing work at their house. And yeah, the rush hour, just 1.5 hour drive there, bumper to bumper traffic. Then you go there, you're starting physical work right off the bat in the heat or rain, doesn't matter. And then once you finish, you're like dead tired from the physical work, and now you got to drive another hour and a half back. And when you're back, like the workers get to go home and relax, get ready for tomorrow. Where like us, we have to get home, kind of figure out who worked how much, what were the hours, who was on work, how much money we spent every day, how long is the job taking, are we up on cost, are we losing money, are we going to profit on this job, what's tomorrow going to be like. If we need stuff, we have to get them before, because usually by the time we're done, and it's like we usually get home around 7 p.m., and by that time, everywhere we usually would be able to get materials are already closed. So you have to plan for tomorrow. It's like, okay, do we have time to go get it in the morning? Do we have time to get it midday? Is the material even going to be available tomorrow? Because if it isn't, then you can't work tomorrow. It's like the schedule-wise, it's all done pretty much the day before. Because you could be going to work, suddenly an accident happens, let's say you bust a pipe. Work gets canceled. So schedule-wise, there's no fixed schedule. It's all just on a whim, figure it as you go.
So you've been in this business for about 8-ish years?
My dad's had it for 8 years. I've been in it for 6. Kind of like 2 years of like 11th and 12th grade, and then 4 after consecutively full-time.
So throughout your time, I'm sure you've worked on a lot of projects, a lot of homes. Are homes most of the projects that you're involved in?
Most of them for us, homes, because usually the ones who do get like the bigger jobs, like if you see the constructions between like streets of like the main streets, those are considered civil work, which those are like city paid by jobs, which for those ones, they're a lot more company demanding. Because to get those types of jobs, you need money behind you. You need a lot of partnerships to have the proper team to be able to do everything. You need funding. You need massive insurance. Because like jobs like that, they'll be like you need an insurance of minimum $1 million. Because if something happens on the main street, it's a public road. So anything can happen. You got to control traffic and all that. So civil work, we don't do those because we just don't have the capacity to be able to take those on, but majority of it is all houses.
And out of the 6 years that you've been working on these houses, is there any particular project that you found very memorable in terms of your satisfaction rate or how much you enjoyed working on the project? If not, if you have a preference for certain houses or certain projects or locations that you've developed throughout the years in this industry?
Well, for us, we usually want to stick to the retaining walls, which, because those are the jobs that you kind of need a certain level of expertise to get into, and not every single person can do it. So once you get those, they of course have more money in them. And because they require more experience, usually if you do get them, the bonus with them is you get the main job, but then alongside the project, there's bonus works you can do. That suddenly now that you're already there, you can easily get the other jobs. But I'd say the more memorable I had was just last year. It was a property in Chilliwack, and it was a house on a hill for an Indian family, which were well off, and they were veterinarians. And this house was on a hill up in Chilliwack, like a mountain, and the backyard of it was on a slope hill, and they wanted us to pretty much dig the entire backyard out and level it so they could build themselves like a tennis area, retaining wall to kind of separate into two levels, and then make like a putting green area for small golf and like artificial grass and everything. Like that job, I mean, for us, that was like the first big property job we got. And for us not having like any experience to quote that much job, because like usually when you quote for a job, you want to get your cost, labor, and then how much you want to profit. And it all needs to still make sense, because of course you put yourself in the client's shoes. They're like, they know you have to make a profit, but it has to be make sense for them to accept it. And for this job, we took a gamble on the price. And we went, all I mean, also the price doesn't matter, but we quoted them $250K for the entire job. And for us at that moment now, we were like, if we get this job and it works out in how we calculated it, it was going to profit at least $100K. And we estimated it to be 2.5 months of work. So for us, just kind of starting from like small, like landscape work, planting trees, to suddenly moving to a job that could potentially give us $100K in profit in a 2 month span. We were like, we need to get this. So we took a massive gamble. We quoted them, and by whatever luck, they came back and said, okay, we can go ahead with the project. And with that project, because we took the gamble, so we're like, okay, if this works out. And my dad, because he was a businessman before, he has the mental capacity to take big risks and kind of not focus on the aftermath, because like if it works out, it works out. Whereas like for me and my brother, we're fairly young in the business. Taking those types of big risks, we just get too stressed over the decisions. So like my dad for this one, he was like, because we have a big job, me renting a machine would be too expensive. So he decided to go buy a brand new machine, which was at the time was well expensive. We ended up financing a little construction machine, which was $50K at the time. And we were like, his understanding was, because if we rent the machine, it was going to be $3,500 a month to rent that machine. But if we financed it was going to be $1,000 a month. So it was pretty much the machine would be making itself the monthly payment plus $2,000 extra for itself if you had the machine. And then if the job worked out right, we could save every penny by owning the machine. We could pay it off even immediately with the profit. So we started that job beginning of June. So we're like, perfect. The weather's perfect. No rain for like in the next 2 months. We can get it done perfectly. But then as we started, the house had because it was on a hill, they had these certain blocks kind of holding the entire mountain up, which they're called locking retaining blocks. It would each of them weigh 2.5 tons. And this house had like 32 of them in a length of maybe 40 feet by like 25 feet tall, buried kind of on the side of the mountain, holding up the entire side of the house. And it was covered with like weeds and everything. So what were they? We're like, oh, we can clean up the weeds for you, to kind of just give them a little extra help. We cleaned that one out, and we ended up seeing that the wall hadn't been built right by the first one guy that built it, and it was pushed. So, I mean, because it wasn't pushed, like, it wasn't built right, it was pushed, and it could have collapsed and bring the whole house down with it. So now, since we had already started, we couldn't even stop the project and be like, okay, you guys should fix this before we start. We got stuck in the motion, so they had to come fix it. So we had an engineer. Engineers came, saw everything. They said it had to get done now. It couldn't wait. So now, and the city got involved. We had to wait for permits. That delayed us a month of no work. So now we're like, okay, summer's almost about to end. Then we got delayed. We finally get the approval that the city goes, okay, here's the drawing. Here's how it has to get completed. Engineers have to be on site constantly to make sure everything gets done right. So we get those. We start, rain season hits. It becomes the time of the year that it's like raining a month straight constantly. And in construction, rain is your nightmare, because the sooner it rains, dirts become heavier, it gets muddy, it becomes harder to get materials out. Like, for an example, like if one area that you dug out was going to be 2 full trucks, it was not going to be 4, because the weight gets heavier and the trucks go by weight. So now you have to, your cost is pretty much getting doubled, and you can work less because it's raining, so the work becomes harder. And because this was like the side of the house, we couldn't even shut down. So we pretty much, a 2-month job got delayed to 5, 6, 7 months of us being just stuck on this one wall trying to build this. And because the engineers were trying to rush us, they're like, you have to finish this. And the way engineers do this is, like, in construction, it's a joke, but everybody hates engineers in construction just because they don't do much of the work itself, of course, but they give you a drawing and they go, make it happen. And at the same time, you're looking at it, and based on your experience, because you do the work, you're like, it can't be done. But like, it can. The calculations say it can be done. Figure out how to do it. So now it was like for us to just kind of like, we're like, okay, we took a gamble on this site, and we're on a hill. Our crew barely knows how to do it. The main pressure is on me and my dad, who know to have the most experience working the machines. So we're like, okay, we have to take the gamble. And this is like another gamble that we took because we didn't know how long this project was going to take to just fix this little wall. So my dad at the beginning was like, do we price the job for the whole? Or do we price by the day? At the beginning, we were like, if we price for the whole job, we were going to say $50,000. And then we ended up doing daily rate. Now guess how much the finished cost of that wall was.
So is this cost, is this cost the cost that you need to pay or they need to pay you?
They need to pay. Because it wasn't part of our contract, we pretty much, because this is the thing, because we were going to, originally we were thinking if we want to do it, like quote them by the project, so we go, we'll take this much and we'll get it done however long it takes. Or we go, we'll charge you daily, cost as comes, you have to pay up, because it wasn't part of our contract. We decided to go daily because we weren't sure how long it would take or how much the cost was going to be. So now we were, if we had done a contract like for a full job price, we were going to do $50,000, but we did daily. Now guess how much it costed them at the end to finish just the wall section, not including our other, their backyard they were going to do.
I would guess, I know it's over $50,000 from your tone. 80?
Nope.
Higher. All right. 115.
Nope. It came out at the end, $340,000.
For just the wall.
Just to finish the wall.
And that wall was done in the previous years by a different construction worker.
So the house was built 10 years ago from when we started. Like, the owner built the house themselves with, like, contracts and everything. And that wall wasn't just built right. Because you're supposed to stagger the walls kind of like Legos to lock them in. You're supposed to put something called the geogrid, which is, like, imagine, like, a fishing net. You're supposed to lay it flat, put backfill material over it to just so over time it can hold the weight of the wall and whatever it's supporting. So the first guy who built it didn't stagger them, just literally stacked a block over another, so there was no support to hold them from moving, barely put any geogrid to actually help hold the weight if it was gonna get pushed. We had pretty much end after 6 months of just excruciating rain season of us just going. And also, just imagine this, it was Chilliwack. So we were going every day from Pitt Meadows, driving 80 kilometers to Chilliwack, then for like an hour or so, then driving 80 kilometers back every day, rain, 8 hours of work there, constant in the mud, like our machines were getting stuck every day in the mud, and machines were breaking down. You'd come home, you're up to your knees, was just muddy from just being stepping in the mud all the time. And after 6 months, we finally finished
the wall.
Yes. That was like, we finally just finished this one extra piece. Not even our contract was still left over that needed to get done. And like that part, that's like the gamble we took. Because like, if we had done $50,000, we would have spent 6 months and only been paid $50,000 for it. But because my dad was like, we don't know, we were going to do daily. And in the beginning, they were going to fight us for like, it's not right to take daily. And we're like, can you guarantee us it'll finish in the time we say? And they accepted, and it worked out for us. Because we said daily, we finished. Because our, like, just the labor cost was $200,000. And then equipment that had to be there for like 6 months. Because for that part, the main problem with it was because those blocks, because they weigh 2.5 tons, you need a certain machine that can lift that much weight comfortably and move it around on a small area. We couldn't fit the right machine down the backyard, so we had to fit a smaller machine and barely managed to lift every block one by one. And because they're big, we couldn't even take them out of the property, so we had to fit them in like corners of the house and just kind of make it work as is. But we finished that, so now we've been in the project for 7 months and we haven't even started our own project. So we finally finished that part, and the main learning curve of this was contracts and writing. This was like the main thing I learned from this big job, because like we had so much cost for like 6 month span, so there was so much cost we didn't even remember to put in like the final quote. Like I remember because every time it was time to get paid, because we told them every month you got to pay us a portion, because we can't be working for like 6 months and not getting paid a little bit. So every month it was a head-to-head battle with the client of us trying to prove that this is the days we worked, this is how much everything cost. And of course, as like a client, you get a quote originally for $250K, you're like, okay, I have money for this. And then suddenly you get hit with a $350K bill. No client would want to pay that up front. So it was just a battle of back and forth with this client of trying to figure out, trying to find every little, even like a letter, like a single word of text to prove everything that we were saying. And finally, like, the wall and our project finished finally in a year, like, time. So a 2.5 month job turned into a 1 full year project that we spent. And then finally, when it got finished, I didn't want to do a single thing with this client. Like, the second it finished, I blocked them on my phone number, went to my dad's phone number, blocked them everywhere. And even throughout the project, there was even times where, because I was the main person talking to them the entire time throughout the whole year, there was so much money that they just refused to pay. But I just made it seem like they paid so my dad wouldn't be stressed on the whole thing. There was some stuff they would like, we would do the job, they would not be happy for it. They just refused to pay for it. I would take money out of my own bank, e-transfer it to my, like, get it as cash, and just show it to my dad, like, oh yeah, they just gave us cash. And then give it to my dad so he would think they paid us. And then I would have to make up the money that I would have to make up for that payment. Pretty much from that, I just learned everything has to be in writing.
Interesting. But would you say that the satisfaction that you felt after finishing what you thought was a 2.5 month project that went on to be a year is what makes this job worth doing?
Oh, 100%. Because, I mean, I'll show you some pictures after of the finished product, but pretty much, as like for me being like 22 at the time, just looking at this scope of work that we finished, I mean, I was proud. I was like, me who's 22 and my dad who is only in the business for 8 years, compared to our relatives that are here, I'm like, we did a masterful job. Because I'm like, the fact that we managed to get this done end of the day, to finish it as we wanted, I mean, the satisfaction was unlike anything I felt today.
Throughout your experience within this industry, and it seems like you've had quite a journey, what would you say are the most important skills someone needs to thrive in this business?
There's a couple, but I'll say the main part of it is the risk factor. Because if you're not dedicated enough to just kind of be able to handle the risk, because with construction, because it's a money game business, like, if you don't have money, you're not gonna make it. So it's like a business that you kind of have to be able to deal with the stress of, at the very beginning, you might not have to pay for yourself. Like, you might be working for a while and you're employees have to get paid on time, but you might have to not pay yourself to just make ends meet. But like that like commitment to be able to take the risk and kind of stick with it to make it work, that's like the main thing. It's like dedication is number one.
All right. So leading up to your experiences and you're continuing on with this industry, do you have any goals that you set in mind for yourself, whether it's regarding the business or, you know, you were put into this business through family matters, but if you have any goals or aspirations outside of the business, whether it can be about your own studies, would you mind sharing anything about that?
I mean, personally, in my own life, like I mentioned at the very beginning, I'm always going to be car enthusiast at heart. So like my goal as of right now, don't know how long it'll take, but I'm going to try and make it happen. I want to get the business to like a kind of, I wouldn't say commercial, but in like a time, like, or like a level of business that it can, because ideally I want to avoid just getting home resident clients. I want to go make it in a way where, because like right now we've been like making a website and everything to kind of get ourselves kind of up to date with the time of how businesses work. But I want to make it in a way where our clients are only like contractors and people building new substructures. Because that way, like if your clients are only contractors because they get work from rich people who are, or like they get buildings they're trying to build and whatnot, if you can build enough of a connection where they just constantly like have work, and if your work is good enough, you can get like 4 good jobs in a year and be totally good for like the entire time. It's that plus just also building a team that I can trust to do the work in my place, so I can put some time focus to everything else. Because as of now, with every time and focus I have that goes into the business, I can't much so put it in the enthusiasm that I have for cars. Because once I get the business in a point where I can kind of step back and let the business take care of itself and kind of take care of it from the backstage, then I can put my time and go study and get an apprenticeship for like a mechanic. Once I get that, that's like the end goal as of right now.
Are you doing anything at all to fulfill this interest that you have with cars?
I mean, not much. I mean, I'm doing it on my own because like the closest experience that I had that kind of cemented my belief that I do want to work on cars end of the day is because last winter, my truck, I had an accident with it where it was snow Christmas. I tried being a lunatic on top of the Coquitlam Center parking lot. Did a spin. I went into a pole and the front end of the truck pretty much destroyed. And like at that point, because the truck was like 2 years brand new, I'm financing the truck still. So I was like, okay, I don't have money to pay it out of pocket immediately. And I was going to give it to ICBC, but they quoted me a huge price. They quoted me $7,000 because I wanted to kind of play the game. I was going to tell ICBC, oh, it was a hit and run, to just kind of get him to cover it. Then I'll just pay like the higher interest, like insurance payments. But when they looked at it, they didn't believe me. I mean, right on them. It's their job to do their own checks. But they didn't believe me. They weren't going to cover it. And they said, if they want to fix it, I'd have to pay the whole thing out of pocket. So I said no to that. And then the truck was still driving despite the accident, because the entire right side of it, the front, like the headlight, everything was destroyed. It was driving. It took me 6 months, but I rebuilt the whole thing by hand in my own garage.
And you got all the parts on your own?
Pretty much. I was like, because I looked at everything, I was like, the truck is driving. There's no problem to the engine, so it's not too complex. It's mainly cosmetic and just finding the parts. So pretty much I just spent time finding every single part that I needed, how much it would cost to get the parts. So just slowly, every single month, just put every little money I had. Like those 6 months, I was living pretty much paycheck to paycheck. Because every money that would come in that I had extra be put back straight into buying parts and getting as many as I could, sooner the better, to just put the whole thing together. Because another thing, if I did go to insurance, it was going to give it the rebuild title, which was just going to bring the value of the whole truck down, which I couldn't afford. But I got it done.
That's very impressive. The last question I have is, if you have any advice that you want to give to anybody who is thinking about getting involved with the construction business, you can go ahead and share it.
I mean, this is one that I'm going through right now, but don't get into your own business immediately. Go work for a bigger company to just kind of figure out how a successful company already runs. Because like right now, due to it being summer and with the whole tariff situation, where we haven't been getting any jobs like 3 weeks. So I've gone to work with a friend of ours that has a successful company in the same line of work. I'm just kind of now learning from them kind of how to make the business successful. So like if you do want to start your own, experience is the biggest key. So it's like if you can get into a bigger company, spend a year or two, get yourself hired in a position so you can just learn as much as you can on how to actually run the business. Because, of course, if you start off at the very beginning, you're just a general labor, so there's not much to learn. So you would want to work yourself up to like a managing level where you can see the backstage, see how to manage everything in like a bigger commercial level. That way, once you start your own business, you kind of already have the blueprints of how it should be run. So that's the main thing, is figuring out how to get to there.
Thank you. So that's it for the interview questions that I have for you today. As a bonus round, I love to do a short game segment with all my guests. And it's just a quick would you rather question round that I have prepared. So I'm going to give you two options, and all I need you to do is just choose one of the options as quickly as possible. Good?
All right.
So would you rather be able to use duct tape for clothing or only wear a hard hat 24/7 for a year?
So duct tape
for clothing
for a year as well?
Nope.
So the duct tape is permanent.
Permanent. Or only wear, or sorry, both of them are for a year, but it's either duct tape for clothing or wearing a hard hat 24/7 for a year.
I'm going to go with the duct tape. I mean, I don't know, the hard hat.
I was going to ask you why the duct tape, because it's not getting it on that's the concern. It's getting it off. But I agree with you on the hat. The second one, yep.
I'm going to just stay indoors the entire year.
Stay indoors, yeah. Would you rather accidentally cement your phone into a wall or your lunch?
Cement mean like get it stuck in the cement?
Mm-hmm.
I mean my lunch, what?
So your phone into a wall or your lunch?
My lunch, why would I get my phone?
I guess the wall, your phone into a wall would make more sense.
How?
I don't even know.
The lunch would be the more.
I guess you can make your lunch again. That makes sense.
The lunch costs like $20. The phone's like $1,100 here.
Well, it depends on what lunch you're having. If it's some sort of caviar, then it's quite pricey. All right, the next one is, would you rather have to build a house entirely out of Jell-O or drywall that screams when you cut it?
This is a very contradicting opinion, because with the Jell-O, I have a movie memory of it, but I'm going to have to go with the drywall. So it doesn't scream once I finish the house.
When you finish the house, I assume that it doesn't scream, but during the entire process, it will.
Oh, I'm going to go with the drywall. It's going to be a nice dad core once I finish that house.
All right. The next one is, Would you rather work with a crew of robots that glitch every 20 minutes or a crew of raccoons wearing safety vests?
I'm being an animal person, I'm going to go with the raccoon.
All right.
They're very cute.
Raccoons kind of scare me. Last time I saw one was in Vancouver, somewhere along nighttime, and it was quite scary. All right, the last one I have for you is, would you rather have all your safety gear be made of marshmallows or your tool belt randomly bursting into opera?
I mean, the marshmallows are a safety thing of itself. You got soft cushion all around. But Oprah just gives you entertainment. I'm going to go with Oprah.
All right.
Doesn't hurt to have some entertainment on the worksite.
True, true. All right. So that's it, Sepper, for today's interview. Thank you again for coming on.
Thank you.
Very interesting story. But you'd agree with me that 52 minutes have gone by quite quickly, huh?
That part's true.
Yeah, it goes pretty quick. But that's all I have for you guys today. That was it for today's interview. Thank you again, Sepper, for coming on my show. I hope you guys enjoy that episode. Like I said, today's a very, very wonderful day, so please go outside and enjoy it. And I'll see you guys all next week with another great episode. So stay tuned and have a good afternoon, everyone. Bye-bye.